listening to the Hometown Losers, the St. Louis Sports Podcast, with Josh, Adam, and OJ.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back here to the Hometown Losers Podcast. This is session number 29. I'm joined by always with my co-host here of OJ and Adam. How are we doing today, gentlemen?
I am doing great. Glad to be back after taking last week off. A little break there. Basically for the holidays and whatnot. So had a good fourth. So like I said, I'm glad to be back.
Yeah. OJ, how was your 4th of July? Was it decent? A lot of fireworks out your way?
Yeah, where I live, people blow them up like crazy, but yeah. You know, we just had a laid back night because we just got a cat and we wanted to make sure he wasn't going to freak out and piss all over the place. So
my dad's birthday is on the 4th of July, so I'm always with him, but I couldn't bring, you know, my boys over, and you know, my dogs, I'm sure, were luckily they did not doesn't look like they, you know, had an accident in their crate. Last year they did. But you know, because obviously it's a lot going on, but I will tell you that people in my neighborhood were not very considerate. They were launching fireworks off, even on the 3rd, they were launching fireworks off at 2 a.m., 3 a.m. It's like, jeez. Jesus, man. Like, well, yeah. And then even the night of, it was the same thing. It's like, I don't understand how people have the money to be consistent.
Speaking of which, and not to dive into that too much, but just to prove, or just goes to show you, I was reading earlier, Missouri imports the highest value of fireworks per person in the entire United States. So if you didn't know that, we imported almost $126 million in fireworks last year alone, which is like $20.40 per resident. The next closest on that list was about half that per resident in Nebraska for $11.83. So we go all out on the 4th, apparently, in Missouri. So
well, that's because Nebraska just, you know, takes shotguns and shoot them up in the air.
Well, so Missouri goes all out. So there you go. Hopefully everybody had a good 4th, and hopefully you all still have your arms and limbs and everything else. So
Yeah, it was I heard something from somebody very close to me that works in a hospital, no names to be mentioned or whatever, but it was a pretty busy 4th of July, unfortunately, for that person. So
nothing like alcohol and explosives. I love it.
Yep. A lot of younger kids, unfortunately. Yeah, so it tells you a lot of people not watching their kids. But anyways, let's get off of that and let's talk a little bit.
What's something else? Talk about something is tragic. Exactly. The Blues.
Yeah, let's talk about something else that really sucks. How about the Blues, right? All right. So we have the draft that happened not terribly too long ago. The Blues did have 9 picks coming into the draft, and we drafted 9 people. A lot of the speculations that we were going to trade away 1 or 2 of our first round picks. That did not happen. Essentially, Armstrong said that, you know, everybody didn't want to trade anybody because they were, you know, such a deep draft. They were like, oh, I can't believe this guy fell to this, you know, to this position and stuff like that. Well, and it's kind of crazy, but you know, it is what it is. It's a little unfortunate because I was hoping that we were going to be able to use some of the draft capital rather than getting a bunch of young people, because that goes more away from a retool to a rebuild, right?
And a lot of those conversations, like you were talking about earlier, Josh, is about those conversations usually happen way before the draft actually happens. So I was kind of surprised that, like, it didn't seem like any, I mean, obviously I don't know what was going on behind the scenes, but I'm hoping that there was at least some initiative to see if there were interest in, you know, trading up per se. But right. I was a bit disappointed. Yeah. When it came to that.
Yeah. So I'm going to go through our draft picks here and go through some statistics and some, you know, little tidbits about them. And then we'll talk about the draft overall. So our first pick was the 10th overall, and that was Dabolor Dvorsky, excuse me. He's a center from Slovakia in the Sweden League of the SHL. Excuse me. I was trying to remember what that was. He scored 6 goals, 8 assists. He had 16 penalty minutes and a plus minus of minus 19 after 38 games played. He did play well in junior tournaments, but when it came to the senior level, it definitely looks like development is needed there. Our second pick, which was the 25th overall pick, was Otto Stenberg. Stenberg, center from Sweden. Yep, it's number 16, or you got, excuse me, one goal, two assists, a minus one on his plus minus in 23 games. Again, playing the SHL in Sweden. He played again well in junior tournaments, but development still needed. Our third pick was the 29th overall, and Theo Lindstein, defenseman from Sweden. One goal, one assist, minus three in his plus minus, 32 games played again in the SHL. You're seeing a lot of that here with this draft. He is a defensive defenseman, so like statistics are not really going to be something that we're going to have to look at there. Quentin Burns was our fourth pick. He was actually the 74th overall pick since we did not have a second round. This was our third round pick, or one of them. He is a defenseman from Canada, two goals and 27 assists, 106 penalty minutes, minus 13 in 54 games played in the AOHL. He did play, he's played in the OHL for 3 years with a total of 33 points, which again is not the greatest statistic, but as for defensemen, you know, it kind of is what it is. Pekarik, a left winger from Slovakia, 76th overall pick. That was also in the third round, three assists and 27 penalty minutes in minus two in 30 games played, also in the SHL. He played well in junior tournaments as well. Again, development needed there. You're going to see that again a lot. Jacob Stancil, center from Czech Republic, 106 pick in the fourth round. He has one goal plus one, plus minus in eight games played in the Slovakian league there. He has lots of junior experience. So that was reported, like, my, you know, like under 16, under 18, under 20, but nothing really jumped out at me. That's like, oh, the, you know, this gives me kind of like hope. I mean, it is what it is at this point. Paul Fisher was our next pick. It was in the fifth round, 138th pick overall, defenseman from US of A. He had four goals and 17 assists and 14 penalty minutes, plus minus of plus 24, 56 games played. And that was all for the United States under 18 team league that they've developed in the past couple of years. He is committed to Notre Dame. So he'll be probably there for at least 2 years, unless, you know, the Blues try to get him a call up. Most likely they'll let him develop, you know what I mean, with Notre Dame first. Mm-hmm. Our next pick was Matt Mayock, a defenseman from Canada with 170th pick. That was also, that was in the sixth round. He had five goals, 17 assists, 56 penalty minutes, a plus minus of plus 22 in 64 games played. That was in the OHL. Nikia Suzanev, which is from Russia. He's a right winger. We picked him with our last pick in the seventh round, 202nd pick overall. 11 goals, 17 assists, 34 penalty minutes with a plus minus, a plus eight, 38 games played. That was, though, in the junior league for the KHL. They're very similar to us where they have an NHL and an AHL. They actually have one that's like the OHL, like a developmental league or whatever. But he played in eight games last year in the KHL before being sent down. So all those numbers are from the minor league system there for the Blues. So lots to go over here with the Blues and the draft picks. But, you know, OJ, I'm going to start with you. What was your overall thoughts on the draft? Were you kind of excited, disappointed? What's your thought process going into this draft or after the draft? Excuse me.
I'm happy with it. I mean, I really mostly only care about like their first three picks, because after that, it's just who knows, you know. But I like it. I mean, I like that they didn't try to force themselves a draft by position. I mean, obviously we need a defense worse, but if you don't think the value's there at your pick, like number 10 specifically, it probably hurts you more to reach than it does to just take somebody that should be taken at number 10.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of watching the hockey guy. I think he said that he thought that was a pretty good first pick for us.
Borski.
But yeah. So I don't know. It sounds pretty good, and it just, you know, it'll be a few years probably before we see any of them, but that's a good thing. They need to restock their minor league system.
Yeah. Adam, what was your thoughts about it? I mean, obviously you and I were at the Cardinals game and actually watched the first round, you know, and so obviously I know a little bit of it, but you know, what's your overall thoughts now that the draft's completed?
I think that they put overall a pretty strong, you know, draft class overall. You know, with Dvorsky, you know, there were some grumbles with him as far as, you know, number 10 pick. You know, it looks like he definitely, like you said earlier, he's going to have to, you know, he's going to need some development. You know, he looks like he's a pretty responsible defensive player, though, even though he is playing as a center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a two-way forward, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And so he's, you know, I think he could be a skilled center eventually, you know, especially whenever he's known for his playmaking ability and, you know, vision on the ice overall. So he's got pretty good speed and agility. So that will, you know, allow him to create some space for himself. So we'll see overall. Obviously, it's going to take some work. And, you know, but I think to OJ's point as well, and what I had also heard is that from Army is that he was going to, you know, draft who he felt was best at that point in time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Best available instead of looking at positions at that point. And I mean, honestly, whenever you're in such a rebuild, grab the best of the best at this point in time that you feel like you can get in this draft, especially when this, you know, we felt looks pretty deep, because that's going to give us options later on, you know.
Yeah, we're at a.
We're
at a stage where we need to make flexible moves, like exactly. Things that are just good no matter what. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So you can try and force something if you're in a little better shape, I guess. I mean, although it's really, I don't know when you force something in the draft unless you think you're just super loaded everywhere else.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's just never a good idea, because you can always trade from a position of strength.
Exactly. Exactly. And you're not going to pick up a defenseman, you know, 10th overall. You know, that we just don't really see that, you know, typically those defensemen usually get a little later. So
yeah, and then that's actually not true. So normally when you have a high end defenseman, they are picked between 10 and 15 historically. If you have like what they consider to be like a franchise defenseman, like Pietrangelo or back in the day, Eric Johnson, stuff like that, they'll be picked very, very high. But most of the time you're going to have your offensive guys and stuff like that in that first, like 1 to 10 pick, stuff like that. Now, that being said, for this draft, Adam, you're 100% right. There was so much offensive talent that I didn't think that I felt like we were going to keep our 10th pick, because like, if we're going to deal, we're going to deal one of our lower picks, right? Obviously we need to be able to have that 10th overall pick. I felt that we were going to take an offensive talent because it was so deep on the offensive side of things. But historically it is between 10 and 15 really is when you start seeing like those first overall defensemen that get taken off the board.
Yeah. And looking at other picks, so with Otto Stenberg overall, you know, like you said, selected, I think he was 25th. You know, he looks another center that he looks like could be also a strong defensive player as well. You know, really good. It looks like ability overall to win faceoffs. Looking at his overall stats and everything, I think he's, you know, he could be decent. Obviously, it looks like he has some good offensive skills and he can eventually contribute on our power play, but he's going to require some development. Lindstein here, mm-hmm. You know, looks like he's got good vision. He's got good passing skills. It's going to allow him, you know, probably create some scoring chances as well. But it looks like he's still got some development though on his defensive game. So, but he's shown some improvement in that area.
Yeah. My biggest gripe about this draft specifically is Armstrong continuing to say retool, retool, retool. This isn't a retool anymore, guys. For anybody listening that believes that we're going to be in a retool, it's not. This is a complete rebuild at this point in time. We have some players and stuff like that that are good on our team, but that's what this draft tells me, because when you look at even Dvorsky isn't going to be on this team next year. He's probably 2 years out. You're probably looking at him at the start of the 25 season. He has a lot of development that is needed. So when he played so well in junior tournaments, but it's the same thing with Steinberg. It's the same thing with Lindstein. It's actually really true with most of our draft picks. They played very well against kids their own age, but when they got to the senior level, they struggled. You know, Dvorsky minus 19 in 38 games. That's not good. That doesn't tell me that he's a good defensive player. That tells me he doesn't have the good defensive awareness. Now, again, you might be playing with a bad team, bad line, stuff like that, right? That does happen. But that being said, too, it just doesn't look all that great. 16 piddling minutes as well in 38 games means that you're very undisciplined. And only, 14 points as well in those 38 games. is I actually, you know, text you, Adam. It was when you took a look at our first three picks or whatever, we didn't have that many points overall from last year's play. We had 8 goals and what, 11 assists from those top three picks last year. Yep. In the senior level. That's not good. Between you would hope that you would have one player that would be above that. Well, that's splitting all three of our players, you know. And I get it. Yeah. You know, it's an unfair comparison to Connor Bedard. Yeah, you know, it's an unfair comparison to like Connor Bedard and some of the other bigger names that were in this draft. But it's still kind of the reality of the situation here. You know, to be honest with you, I'm not very happy with this draft. And it's not because I didn't like who we picked up. It was more for the fact that I don't like where the Blues are heading. You know, our championship window with the draft being the way it is. And some of this is not going to be on Armstrong because, you know, people don't want to deal players. They're not going to want to deal players. Right. But I had a little bit of hope that we might be able to, again, retool that Armstrong kept saying and potentially keep our championship window open. I think our championship window is completely closed now.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's been closed for a little while, but I didn't think
well, I agree.
Able to turn around and be able to get it back into, we're just too far out. It's more than just what our draft could bring us because we have so many, so many issues, you know, overall, which we'll get to eventually, but
Yeah. And speaking of Dvorsky, I believe, like, when I look at Dvorsky, and I've watched a little bit of the video of him playing that I can find online and stuff, you know, just from NHL analysts and .com and stuff. But Dvorsky reminds me very much of Alexander Steen, which is very good for us because that plays very well into our style. Obviously, he's not going to be there just yet. But what that tells me, he's not going to be a center. We drafted him probably to be a center. He's most likely going to be moved to a wing. Because his face-off percentage in the as a center in the like professional league, right, in the SHL, in the non-junior league, the adult leagues, I wanted to say like something more than adult league because it's, you know, that sounds weird compared to the juniors, but his face-off percentage was 26%. That is atrocious. So that's something that you definitely have to take a look at.
Yeah, I think Stenberg looked like a better option.
Yeah, Stenberg was 59%, which is better, you know what I mean, especially for a you know, a player, you know, for Stenberg and stuff like that as well. Yeah, especially that's going to be more of, honestly, like Stenberg's game kind of reminds me a little bit of Ryan O'Reilly. Like he does the discipline stuff. He's not going to get, like, Ryan O'Reilly can score goals, but we know him as more of a 20 goal scorer with 40 assists. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's the kind of Ryan O'Reilly that we know when he can be successful. When he was in Colorado, he's lighting up the lamp and stuff like that, 30 goal scorer and stuff like that. But that's really not where he draws his strength. His strength is being a great two-way player. That, to me, is what Stenberg could potentially end up being. But that being said, you know, again, there were so many players that we traded away that there's obviously no replacing them. You know what I mean? Even if we got Connor Bedard, Connor Bedard would give us a huge jumpstart to our rebuild, but it's not going to be like, oh, hey, good, we're going to be cup contenders. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? But I was overall disappointed, not again by player selection, stuff like that, just from the fact that I know at this point, again, like, championship window's closed and it's a complete rebuild and not a retool. I will say, too, that they made some interesting selections when it came to some of the other players. Like Stenberg, for example, I thought there was potentially better people on the board. But, you know, again, you take the best of what's available and they see him as a higher value than, you know, some of the other other people that were out there. It is kind of interesting that when you look at the senior, that's the word I was looking for, in the senior leagues, it takes us all the way to pick number 6 before we actually get a positive plus minus. You know? That's not great, but, you know, it literally is what it is at this point. They obviously need a lot more development, but unfortunately, this is going to be very similar to, you know, 2004, 2005, 2006 years where we were, you know, getting some players and, hey, cool, we got David Backes coming up. We have TJ Oshie coming up. We have David Perron coming up, but they took a few years to develop and stuff like that. Sure. So for anybody that believes that the Blues can, you know, go out and do something, I'm going to be the naysayer on that, and I hope they prove me wrong. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to – they do seem to be taking a longer approach, and I assume that's because no opportunities presented themselves to them. Like, I think Armstrong's best shot was to get rid of Krug in that Philly deal. And when that fell through, I think it was kind of like, well, there's nothing else out there that really fits our needs. So we're going to, you know, pivot to more of a long-term thing. So if that's, yeah, what, and that's, if actually, that's the way it is, that's the way it is, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it literally, it is what it is. And Armstrong can only work his magic so much. And I will say, we'll be talking about the Hayes trade in just a minute, but I actually like this Hayes trade better, the one that actually went through, much, much more than the one that we were going to be giving. Because essentially we were going to be giving a first round pick. Yeah, we were going to be potentially getting a defensive prospect in the mix, but we would be giving up Torey Krug in a first round just to essentially offload the contract with Torey Krug, which, you know, let's be honest, I think that there's a lot, like, it's not like a lot of teams are strapped out there, especially the Phillies. They're not strapped for any, like, concerns when it comes to salary cap and stuff like that. They don't need a first rounder to be like, oh, hey, let's sweeten the deal so we can, you know, take this contract or anything like that. That's just not how it was going to be. But, you know, that's just my opinion.
Yeah. So I think for that Hayes trade overall, I was happy with it, you know, giving up sixth round pick. You know, and also the fact is that the Flyers had to retain half his salary, you know, for the next 3 years. Correct, you have this service 3 year cap. So only we take a cap hit of what, 3.5 mil?
3.3, I think is the actual number. But yeah, you're pretty close.
Somewhere in there. Yeah. You know, for a guy that, you know, at least last year, you know, with a total of 18 goals, 36 assists, so 54 points. You know, not a bad pickup for, we didn't really have to give up much, and also we got it pretty cheap.
Yeah, and so let's actually transition to that Hayes trade here, and so we can get our opinion. So for anybody that, you know, Adam, you pretty much said all the details to it, but I'll just read it real quick. For anybody that's been on a rock and did not pay attention, or hasn't been, didn't pay attention to what Adam just said, the Blues got Kevin Hayes for a sixth round pick in 24. And I do like the fact that it wasn't in this draft, which is very deep. It is in 24. So it's a six round pick, which again is pretty much a free player essentially when you look at it. Anything below a fourth round pick, a lot of people consider that to be more of a free pick. And the fact that they get to, you know, that they're retaining half his salary as well gives us a lot of stability in that aspect of things. And you said it, Adam, you know, he had quite a few, you know, 18 goals, 36 assists, right? In 81 games. He played 81 out of the 82 games, and one of them he was just a healthy scratch for rest, so it's not like he was injured or anything like
that. Yeah, compared to like the previous year where he, you know, he only played 48 because I think we had some injuries, I guess. At least he made a good recovery.
Injuries,
yeah.
So he made a good recovery. Like, the thing is, like, his plus minus on the Phillies, on the Philadelphia Flyers, which was a terrible team last year, was minus 22. And that's actually his career plus minus is minus 22. He's actually scored 155 goals, 231 assists for 386 points in his career out of 634 goals. So it's really, actually the numbers are a little bit better than I thought they were going to be. Like, you know, I've heard of Hayes, but it's not like, oh, hey, I was super excited that we were getting Hayes because I'm like, oh, he's going to be a great goal scorer and stuff. However, he damn near was a 20 goal scorer. And that's kind of what we need right now. You know, we just need to get some scoring depth and stuff. So I think that was
some good experience for sure for it as well. You know,
yeah,
like around 700, you know, games played so far. And, you know, I think for compared to what his contract, whenever they initially picked him up from the Jets, you know, a 7 year deal, $50 million contract, I think we walked away, you know, with honestly, I think we definitely walked away with winner on that one, especially when it comes to our cap. We really have to be careful because I think we got a boost of what, 4 mil in the cap this, you know, for next year, but we really got to be careful with that, you know. So when we're looking at talent, let's not overspend for sure.
Yeah. So OJ, what's your thoughts on the Hayes trade?
I'm okay with it. It's fine to me.
Anything at all that kind of, you know, spits out at you, like this was a good thing or this was a bad thing?
So on it definitely is. I mostly think it's a good trade with just the one reservation that was the whole thing that went down with him last season, where, like, basically Philly wants to get rid of him because Tortorella's out there saying, like, this guy doesn't give a shit. Like, he's basically saying he didn't give any effort and all that kind of stuff. And what's interesting to me is that, like, I kind of think that's the one of the key problems that we had last season was our forward group in general didn't care to defend enough, which is why Tortorella benched him, is why Philly was so anxious to get rid of him that they sent him to us for just a sixth round pick at half salary retained. So the worry is, of course, that he's not going to help our situation, given that's his attitude. But on the other hand, if he's really trying to prove Tortorella wrong, maybe he'll have an uncharacteristically good defensive season. So who knows?
Yeah, you're hoping that it's not going to be two great games against the Flyers and then the rest of it's just
like, exactly.
Where to your point.
Yeah, because he's like, if he's going to do the Dreisaitl thing but not score like Dreisaitl, then no thanks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's the thing about it is, go ahead, Adam.
Well, I just going to mention or whatever. It could have been the fact that he was, you know, feeling a lot of what like our team was feeling last year as well. They just felt defeated, so, you know. Yeah. And that very well, because obviously the Flyers as of late have really sucked, and perhaps that could be part of it. I don't know. Hopefully that's not, you know, his play ethic, you know, long term. But I know that sometimes these guys they burn out, you know, whenever they're playing for a losing team. You know, Josh, you and I talk about that all the time about, you know, some of the shit that you've had to deal with in the past. It makes it hard to stay motivated sometimes.
Well, yeah, for sure. And there's a reason why I left the softball team that I was on, you know, like I love the guys and stuff like that, but I was tired of losing and, you know, it's incredibly deflating and you go there and you're just like, all right, well, we're going to lose you. And that's the mentality you have is like, you know, how much are we going to lose by this time? And, you know, I think with Hayes and not even with the Hayes, with the Flyers in general, the past 2 years, they've been doing exactly what the Blues did this past season of getting rid of all their players and stuff like that. You know, they got rid of Giroux is no longer on the team. That was their big guy, their captain, stuff like that, had been there for a long, long time. He's gone. You know, they kept moving bigger pieces and stuff like that. So to me, that's potentially where it's at, but we'll see if he, you know, he comes to St. Louis. I think that he'll have a spark on, spark in his ass to play, well, the first couple of games, but then what happens if we continue to lose, if we come in the beginning of the season and we lose 10 out of 15 games, is he going to go back to doing that? Because OJ, you brought up a very good point to that, you know, and it's just like, because the mentality thing is going to be there. And the other thing too, if this is the one thing that I will say, the caveat to this is I did read a report that says that Hayes is like, this was like, take it for what it is more of a rumor than anything, but Hayes wasn't very happy that he's coming to St. Louis. He wants to be in a bigger market.
Well,
if that's the case, then that's not the guy you're going to want anyways. And, exactly. You're going to want to move him up. Now, who knows, you know what I mean, how that is. There could be people just
– he doesn't get a say in that, though, necessarily. So unless you've got some clause in your contract, you don't get a say, dude. So
– right, exactly. Okay. And, you know, for me, you know, a lot of people thought that he was stating that he was going to go to New York. And I think he even thought that he potentially was going to go to New York for the Rangers specifically. Mm-hmm. But obviously that didn't happen. And you know, it's just like, okay, we're going to go to the NBA just for a second. I know you guys don't really watch the NBA, but you know, Damian Lillard, great basketball player from Portland, but very loyal to Portland. Now he demands a trade and says, I want to go to Miami. Well, there's nothing in his contract that says, I have a no trade clause. Right. So, but I don't understand why they're saying that pretty much, the NBA, like that Portland's going to deal him to Miami. Because that gives Portland no leverage on getting anything out of the deal, right? And to the point, his agent, Damian Lillard's agent, came out and put out a warning on social media for the other 28 teams that are in the NBA that says, if you make a trade package for Damian Lillard that and is not going to Miami or staying in Portland, he is going to be a very unhappy player. I'm like, so you're threatening? I'm like, you have no leverage. Be a freaking professional. You know what I mean? Like if he comes to whomever, then it's your job to play good. But, you know, it is what it is. Right. I'm not going to talk about the NBA, but that's my thing about it is like, I think that this is just my opinion. I believe that like professional athletes are a little bit more coddled because they feel that they're more entitled to what, you know, they really are entitled for, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? So because think about back when we were all growing up. Players would change, you know, rosters and stuff like that, but they were making like pennies on the dollar sometimes, you know, and going to really crappy teams or crappy clubs, but they still tried very hard. You know, I just don't see that really happening anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So just my opinion on it. But anyways, so let's move on from the Hayes situation here. And let's talk about what the Blues need to do in this offseason. Adam, I'm going to start with you here. You know, what are your thoughts on what the Blues need to do in the offseason?
Well, there's definitely a few points that we need to make a decision, or, you know, they need to decide on the future for the Blues. And, you know, I know that one is an unpopular choice, but they really need to decide whether or not, you know, we're good with the coaching staff currently. You know, we need to evaluate not only Brewer, but the rest of the coaching staff and determine really if there's any changes that need to be made. You know, I think that's going to be a pivotal part of our future going forward.
Agreed.
Also, I think that we should either trade Krug or Letty potentially and make room for some younger players potentially, you know, when it comes to our defense. That's obviously Krug has been brought up before. I'd love to be able to unload that if we can, but I don't know how realistic that looks right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And when you take a look at our cap, our salary cap going into next year. Mm-hmm. So this is on Spotrac, right? We have an estimated cap space of 2.3 million with a margin for only 200,000. So essentially that margin could be 2.1 or it could be 2.5, essentially is what they're saying. But our defensemen that we're paying mm-hmm. 29.2 million on contract. That's number 6 in the league for this defensive group that stocked last year.
And based upon that, I think that there are some options maybe to free up some cap space. Maybe we can even buy out Scandella's contract potentially. I think he's only got like a year left. So, you know, they may want to consider buying him out just because we can free up some cap space potentially, especially on the defense, you know?
I don't think so. Yeah, but I'm pretty sure the problem is that you have to then also – so not only would he hit your cap this year, but then also next year.
Correct.
So, like, yes, you probably get a penalty, rather
right. Exactly. Let him play. Because you're right, OJ. Either trade him or – because buying out a contract, you would have a dead cap of half that salary as a penalty next year. So that would really, really hurt in that aspect of things when you're trying to build a roster and stuff like that. Now, to your point, Adam, like, say I'm just going to play devil's advocate. Say we get rid of Krug. We get rid of Letty. Say we get rid of, like, a lot of these, like, higher-end players and stuff like that. Then maybe you look at a buyout because then it's not going to be as, like, big of a deal because you know these younger players in bargain bidding is what you're going to be doing, right? Yeah. But I think that to OJ, to your point, I agree with you that I think you just let him play, you know, at that point, and just then don't sign him back for a year.
For sure.
Yeah, exactly.
And then also a couple other points, you know, I would say is we need to add some depth at center for sure, especially, you know, if we decide to trade off one of our, you know, veteran centers, we need to keep, you know, adding depth to that for sure. And potentially looking at the goaltending situation too, you know, because let's face it, you know, they really struggled last year. So maybe we need to start, looking at, you know, one of our prospects and give them a chance to compete for the job potentially as well.
Well, yeah, we got Hofer next year. He's on a one-way contract.
So
we'll have Bennington, Hofer, and then
we got Malcolm Subban. He's gonna be playing in our AHL. Yay!
Wait, for real?
Yeah, we signed Malcolm Subban to a two-way deal.
Oh. Okay, as long as as long as he doesn't inflict him upon our NHL team.
No. Like, obviously he'll be there just in case, but no, like we signed him specifically for that. Yeah.
Yeah. And another thing too, I was going to say is, you know, just be active in the free agency as well. Obviously we have been in recent years. So we just need to make, you know, a big splash there potentially makes, you know, we definitely have some room for improvement. So maybe another big move can help us there.
And that's my thing about it is I feel that we need to take a look at a free agency, but here's the problem. We only have $2.3 million in cap space right now.
And that's the reason why I said we need to make some cap space there.
Agreed.
With our defensemen for sure. So that's where you're gonna have to start looking there and see because this is gonna be a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, I agree. And it's because
it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy. Yeah. But, you know, these are just goals that are going to, you know, you basically are going to list out these goals. I'm not saying you're going to be able to achieve all of them in the off season for sure. But this is something that we need to work towards long term because we're in a rebuild, you know. So
yeah. Let me ask you guys, I didn't even read this, but we just signed Scott Perutovich back in, you know, last month to a one-year, one-way contract extension. Uh-huh. So Perunovic will be on the NHL team. What do you guys think about Perunovic being an actual, like, a contributing member to the defensive core for the Blues next year?
I like it. I mean, I do think part of the reason they found themselves in such a crappy position with the defensemen they signed is because they didn't give enough of an opportunity to some of the guys they had. Like, Callie Rosen kind of stepped up last year. Now, Perunovic, he's kind of at the point where either he plays or he gets hurt again, and then he's basically probably done because no one's going to think he can stay healthy anymore.
Yeah.
So, right. Give him the year contract, get him a chance to play and prove himself because he could be pretty good.
Yeah, it looks like in 10 games for Team USA, he racked up 8 points overall. But like you said, you know, that shoulder injury definitely limited him quite a bit. Ran a lot of regular season AHL, so he's going to have to stay healthy.
Yeah.
But at this point, I agree. Let's you know, bring in some of these younger guys and see what they got. At this point, I don't think we're going to be contenders, you know, next season anyway. So let's look at our prospect, you know, let's look at our younger guys and start playing around with it, see how well they play. So, because the mix just wasn't, you know, doing it last year at all. Yeah. Potentially they could, you know, set the tone going forward.
So, with that being said, I will say that we pretty much talked about everything that I want to talk about, especially Torrey Krug, but I would say definitely offloading Parayko as well. You know, Parayko, again, got a lot of criticism last year. I don't think he is the concern for the Blues of, like, why they lost, but Parayko also does have that high-end contract that if we could offload that as well, I do believe that it could definitely help us in the long run, right? So, to me, this is my thing. If we're going to rebuild, it's time to rebuild. You know, getting rid of all these heavy contracts for players that are so-so and moving forward to a younger group, or trying to then go out and be more aggressive in the offseason. Not even for this offseason, but next offseason and stuff like that as well. You know what I mean? So that's the only other one I would say is to potentially try to find a trade partner for Parayko. And there's been a lot of interest for Parayko in the past 4 years. So I think that we would be able to find a trade partner. It's just what value are we going to get in return, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's on quite a contract, unfortunately, given how he plays. So
yeah, exactly. Because we were planning on keeping him. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. So, you know, that'll be, you know, is what it is at that point in time. Let's get some offseason predictions from you guys. OG, I'll start with you. You know, what are your thoughts here on where the Blues will end up in the standings? You believe they'll make a run of the playoffs? Like, what was your thoughts on what this team could potentially do next year?
Well, it depends how well some of their misfit toys perform, I guess you'd say. Because, I mean, you could think that, like, a guy like Verana, who is a first-round talent, like, or a high draft pick talent, you know, if he could put – we know what he went through, and he's supposedly – past that now, and so if he can really put it all together, I mean, you could have a steal of a player right there,
right?
So I mean, some of these guys have like real potential. Most of them probably won't hit it, but I think Sammy Blay is gonna have a good season too, because he really seemed to get his mojo back once he got back to St. Louis and he started scoring again. Yeah, I know he had a tough time with the Rangers, but I mean, I could see some guys performing better than we expect. And I could see the defense performing better than we expect also, because, I mean, I think their pride was hurt last year. And I know, like, Justin Faulk doesn't want to have to do that shit again. Like, he seems like the guy that's going to try and start pushing folks. So I hope he does. But, yeah, I mean, probably I could see us being like a bubble playoff team potentially if a lot goes right. But, you know, we could also be very far out pretty quickly. So
right.
It just all depends yeah. how things come together. I mean, because the other thing is Hofer kind of looked pretty good last year in limited starts. So, I mean, if all of a sudden you get another, like, stud goalie, like, all of a sudden now your outlook for your season changes completely. So.
Agreed. Yeah, especially because, like, remember how Yaroslav Halak and Brian Elliott tandem, and they were so damn good together. I'm hoping that's what Hofer and Binnington can be, because Hofer can drive Binnington to be that competitive and be as good as we know he can be. I think that not having a defense in front of Binnington really pissed him off and got him out of the groove, and it got him on his confidence where he didn't feel like he was performing well. So I think that, you know, having that tandem there and a consistent tandem, I think can definitely help as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, I could see us being a bubble. I'd probably say bubble playoffs to pretty bad if everything breaks wrong.
Right. You know, yeah, exactly.
Verana still does, you know, if he doesn't put it together and Sammy Blais reverts to the guy that can't score anything like in New York or whatever. Although, to be fair to Sammy Blais, they did just stick him on their fourth line. Like, it's not like he got a whole lot of opportunity to play in the goal scoring kind of role. So I don't know.
Adam, what's your thoughts on the upcoming season? What do you have for your predictions?
Yeah, I was going to say I honestly don't have a great feeling about it going into this. You know, obviously, you know, like you said before, we're really in a rebuild at this point in time. We'll be lucky if we, you know, we might be able to sneak in, you know, that first round, but it's going to be really tough as a wild card maybe, but I really don't anticipate that we're going to make it very far. Overall, I think we're going to be looking at another disappointing year. But it'll be interesting though. Really what I'm going to be looking at for this season is, you know, how well that, you know, the younger talent, especially getting out on the ice and, you know, how well they adapt and, you know, if we have a real future and, you know, and what, how soon we can potentially make another run, you know, seeing some of their, how, you know, how they develop.
Yeah, for sure. And I think I'm kind of with you guys here. So my predictions coming into, you know, 23-24 NHL season for the Blues is that we're going to finish 30th out of 32 teams, and we'll be dead last in the West. And obviously that means the Central. I really have no hope for this team.
Especially considering look at what has happened and how these other teams have just completely, you know, retooled and stacked their teams. I mean, look at the Blackhawks, you know, they're going to go from last place mm-hmm. to they're going to be a hell of a contender in the Central Division now. Same with the Preds and everything else, you know?
Yeah. Besides Bedard, I mean, the Blackhawks have been making moves like nobody's business. And it's like, why the hell would anybody want to deal with the Blackhawks is beyond me. But everyone that continues to just deal with it, you know,
with
the Blackhawks. Yeah, exactly. And it's actually super funny. So obviously Ryan O'Reilly's going to the Preds, right? Mm-hmm. You know who apparently a deal was there on the table, but it fell through. He was going to go to the Blackhawks.
Not surprised. Like, oh. Not surprised.
So I've lost a lot of, I mean, Ryan O'Reilly's dead to me. Like, I said that to you before, Adam, you know, obviously off air, he's dead to me. Like for you to go, you know, right away to, you know, a central, you know, it's a business and stuff like that. But I mean, you definitely didn't show the heart last year and all of a sudden here you go, like, nah, I'm done with it.
So. Yeah. Definitely hurts for sure.
Yeah. Well, speaking of being done with it, let's transition here to the St. Louis Cardinals. And hey, guys, by the way, so this just happened not too long ago. We won a game against the Marlins. We won that a was fucking
tonight.
Game.
Yeah, like 3-0, I think, because of Arenado. Yeah. But
Arenado and Gorman hit a home run.
That previous game, though, air. Dude.
Yeah. Oh, trust me. I know that was
it was so burn it down, like you said. Oh, man, that was just so awful.
I will tell you here, I'm just going to go through this update real quick. And then we're going to talk about that game specifically, Adam. Ooh. So Cardinals are now 35 and 51. That was before tonight's win. So we're actually 36 and 51. Not that it matters. We're 13 games back in the Central, 11 and a half games out of the last wild card spot. And we're 26 out of 30 teams since the last update. where 4-7, well now 5-7 or whatever, or since the last podcast, we've won one series that was against the Yankees, believe it or not. We've had two lost series, one against the Marlins, because we almost got swept in a four-game series against the Marlins, and we split the two-game series against Chicago. But last night, for anybody that didn't see the game, Cardinals are, you know, trailing going into the top of the ninth, and, you know, Jordan Walker hits a home run and puts us up, right? So we're up 9-8. There's a runner on first and second with, I believe, one out. It gets hit back. Was it Hicks? That I'm pretty sure it was Hicks, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was. It fielded the ball. It's literally a slow ground ball to a pitcher. Routine throw to first base. He overthrows it, and they score two runs on that error and win the game. It's just unbelievable on how much the Cardinals find ways to lose the game. And I was listening to the broadcast for the Marlins because that was the only one that I could find or whatever, because I was on my phone or whatever. I wasn't like around radio. And the Marlins guy was like, oh, the Marlins, they just find a way to win. I'm like, no, they don't. Like, Cardinals found a way to lose. What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now with everybody, I'm done with the Cardinals. I'm done with them this year. They've disappointed me beyond belief this year. I'm done with them. I'm done. I'm not watching any more games. I'm not putting any more time and effort into them besides this podcast and doing research and stuff like that, because I'm just done. That to me is unbelievable. I mean, it's like, who the hell is paying him to overthrow that much to first base with a game on the line? Like, I don't understand it, you know? So that
is something that we're seeing on a regular basis where we're just finding ways to lose games, like the game we went to as well. It's just we're finding ways. It's just painful.
Imagine being Nolan Arenado opting into the deal, right? And watching that happen from third base and being like, are you fucking kidding me again with this?
Yeah.
You know, like, there's no way.
Very creative ways to lose every single night. Yeah. They always find a new
I would not be surprised if Nolan Arenado requested a trade at the end of the year.
Wouldn't surprise me.
This is,
and the same with Goldschmidt too. The fact is that we're wasting their golden years, you know, on a shitty team that's just amateurs. Yep. The fact that they're wasting their time here. I mean, they really are. I really genuinely feel bad for them because we're wasting their time. It's just
what I told you guys in a group text, you know, yesterday.
They should be on a winning team.
I believe the Memphis Redbirds are a better team than the Cardinals. If the Memphis Redbirds played the St. Louis Cardinals in a 7-game series, I think the Memphis Redbirds would win that series. Yeah. I'm just being honest. Like, I really believe that's the case here at this point in time because the Cardinals have been that fucking bad as a team.
I mean, and one of our closers comes in and immediately gives up like a 4-pitch walk for the first batter. And then at that point, you just know it's over. You know, do we even have a pitching coach? That's my next question, but it is what it is.
That is the truth here.
Yeah.
Well, let's get to the next thing. So we've already kind of talked about this here, but let's talk a little bit about trade candidates. OJ, I'm going to talk to you here. There's three specific ones that have been mentioned on ESPN on reporting that they pretty much said that the Cardinals need to be a fire sale. They said that we need to look for trade partners for Goldschmidt, for Flaherty and Montgomery. So let's start with Goldie here and we'll go around the bin. But OG, what's your thoughts? Do we trade Goldschmidt?
No, we have him for another year.
Yeah, and that's I said the exact same thing. I said no, because we do have him for another year. You hope that next year is going to be better. You know, and try not to hit the panic button on literally the reigning MVP in the NL. You know what I mean? But yeah. It's because the other thing too about it is, what are you going to get in return? Draft picks? Yeah. Well, we know in baseball that doesn't mean much anymore. You know what I mean? Unless we're getting the number one overall pick. And even then it's very hard to because there's just nobody coming forward. You know what I mean? Like, you know, Shohei Ohtani didn't come through the draft. You know what I mean? So where do you find that value in baseball? It's super hard to do.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not easy. And, you know, people are already saying, oh, well, you're not going to get that much for him. He's getting paid commensurate to his value. So clearly he's not worth anything. You know, there's idiots. But at the same time, he's not going to get as much as he could if he was like even like a few years younger. Like the fact that he's old, people are like, well, we'll have him for one more year, but is that year going to be as good as this year? We don't know. So
yeah, and you actually take a look at his flashing lines here. When you take a look at his lines, he's actually not batting all that bad. It's just the fact that the Cardinals suck so much, it amplifies and makes him look like he's batting.
Paul Goldschmidt's like, playing very well this
season. He did. Hell, the night we went, he hit a dinger there. You know, he's been doing great. The fact is, our offense has been doing pretty damn good. It's just the fact that we find ways to lose games consistently. That's the problem. Agreed. You know, stupid mistakes over and over and over. And the fact is that we're leaving pitchers in there and they're struggling and no one seems to give a shit. And we have no one seems to be like, it's just non-existent. We're going to find every excuse in the book to throw at everybody else but the pitchers. I understand there's, you know, the Contreras bullshit coming up that we'll talk about. But the fact is, it's just like there's no accountability.
Accountability. There. Yeah, exactly. None. Fucking right. The thing about it, Adam. To that point, we've been bitching about this since forever. Like the second or third
and
week
I am
of the,
so tired
of the
it.
Season.
Somebody has to be fired at this point. I'm done with it at this point. It has to happen. Someone has to be held accountable at this point in time. It's over. I'm tired of hearing about how we're working on. Someone has heads have to roll at this point. This is completely unacceptable.
It's very much like our old employer, Adam, which we obviously won't mention here, but you know, we're doing stuff and nothing changes.
But nothing's improving. It's the same shit every single day. The
same shit every
single like, okay,
day.
At one point do you finally put your foot down and say enough is enough?
That's enough. You know? Yeah, exactly.
And you have to start somewhere. And the fact is that I really start looking at our leadership because that's where a lot of these decisions are made.
We'll talk a little bit about that. But
when it comes to trades, though, I think there's some room for improvement. And honestly, I know that you mentioned, you know, Montgomery, which I understand. Also, Florida, you know, Flaherty's been brought up as well as potential trade in the future. Potentially, we'll see. You know, I don't think we should be trading Goldie, though. Not yet.
No, I agree.
Maybe
O'Neill, sounds like you were trying to,
but I don't. I don't see Goldie. Not yet.
Yeah. OJ, I think you were going to bring up a point before.
I was just going to say, to me, this is what happens when you don't put enough emphasis on the little things in baseball that you need to do to win games, like fielding and all that. Because even Arenado has had a much worse defensive season than he usually has. There's something weird going on. My suspicion is that they cut out a lot of stuff they would normally do in spring training regarding base running and defensive drills and stuff like that. And so, you know, players have been rusty and all that. Because, I mean, really, you never see this from the Carlson. I haven't seen play like this since the Mike Matheny era. Not that it was ever this bad. Don't get me wrong. Like, I feel like
that's my thing about it.
Yeah, like with Marmol's Mike Matheny, they seemed like they were. Yeah, he's making him look good. Because in the Matheny era, they seemed like, oh, they're not paying enough attention to base running and defense. But like now, they seem like they don't pay any attention to that, and they're just like scared shitless of making a mistake at any time. Like it's, I don't know, dude. It's all that together just turns them into like literally they got turned into like the Cubs basically. That's how they're playing. They're playing like how loser teams play, where you just go out there and you look like a fucking clown and then just throw the ball away to give the game away to the other team. Like, you don't see well-run teams behaving this way. I mean, from a baseball ops perspective, like actual baseball, the game itself. I don't care what the front office is doing. If you're fucking airmailing balls over the first baseman's head like that, you're not prepared. That's a problem.
Oh, agreed. Yeah, I agree. And like, and we'll get to being prepared here in just a little bit, especially around Contreras. But that's to me 100% OJ. And I'm wondering, And there's been a lot of talks that the reason why we're so bad in the fundamentals is because of the WBC. We did have a lot of players in the WBC, actually tied for second, I think.
Yeah.
But that doesn't. But they're professional fucking this. Athletes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we're almost to the halfway point of the season, yeah. and nothing's changed.
You can't just continue to blame that.
The issue
I can understand if we made a stumble, but that we're back. But come on now.
You do need to drill that stuff every spring, and if you do cut it out of your routine, then this is what you get, because you saw it in the Matheny era, right? Like,
for sure.
You went from La Russa, where we played generally okay defense. In Matheny's era, it was like kind of bad, you know, and we kind of turned into one almost an American League kind of feeling team, where it's like we're not fast, we don't push
home runs
on the base path.
Yeah,
we're mostly station to station. We don't care about defense that much and all that stuff. So like that's how it was in the Matheny era. And I believe,
which is funny, because Matheny won how many Golden Gloves? You know what I mean? So defense should be important to Matheny.
Yeah. But then, you know, it was literally like a year after Schilt took over, it just completely changed. So you could tell it was a point of emphasis with them. And I think that is something you had to drill in the spring, because you don't have a lot of time to do any extra practicing during the season, because guys are worn down. So they're only going to focus on stuff that's going to wear and tear their body the least. So, that's my suspicion. And so, to me, this entire season was completely preventable, and it's very preventable next season. So I don't see much of a point in selling everything off or anything like that, because you look at Jordan Walker, you look at Nolan Gorman, Mason Wynn, they're bringing up Herrera, who is hitting like 140-something WRC plus in AAA as a catcher. So they're bringing him up. And Mozeliak mentioned that he thought he was happy with how Herrera progressed in catching duties this past offseason. So they seem to have more confidence in him behind the plate as well. So, I mean, with all these young guys you got coming up, you do have some good players and pitchers in the minors as well. So, like, to me, we should keep all of the pieces we think we can get back next season. And then if you want to trade the ones that you don't think will be back, sure, that's fine. Because I don't think we're making the playoffs this year either.
No, we're definitely not making the playoffs. I mean, we're 11 and a half games back. Now, we faced worse odds, but we had better teams and better team play. It just happened to be that the Central was on fire that year. You know what I mean? So I disagree with the fact that, like, this is very, like, I've been hearing that, oh, we might be able to make like a 2006 or, you know, run, or a 2011 run for that matter. No, I don't see that happening. I don't think this team is that good. And we don't have the pitching that can help with that as well. You know what I mean? Which actually brings me here to like Flaherty. Jack Flaherty has been a trade candidate actually for the past like three seasons or whatever, because of the inconsistency that we've had with them. Personally, I'm okay with trading away Flaherty because he's been so inconsistent. Obviously, we've seen him be like Bob Gibson, but we've seen him be like Rick Ankiel too. You know what I mean? So I don't necessarily think that Jack Flaherty, who does have some trade value now, but it's either we trade him or we're stuck with him, because there is like, this is the only time we're going to have trade. He's going to have any trade value. If he continues to go up there and give out six runs in three innings, he's not going to be worth anything. You know what I mean? So
Well, he did just pitch a gem tonight.
Yeah, agreed. He did.
But that's the problem.
He's had some good games this season.
That's the problem.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And health has played a part in that. Mm-hmm. His lack of consistency, I should say. Yeah, certainly.
And I agree with you, Josh, 100%. We should get something while we can with for him.
Yeah, so Flaherty in his first two starts walked 14 batters in his first two games, right? When he was on, he had a whip that was 0.15 or something like that, like ridiculous. So, like, I mean, but then, so, okay, he got rid of that, because in over six games, he had an ERA of 2.05, over six games. And it's like, oh, cool, Flaherty might be back. And then two games in a row, gives up six runs within four innings, you know? And so, obviously, he pitched well tonight. You're 100%, but the inconsistency is just maddening. And when you have a bullpen and a pitching staff that has been this inconsistent, you've got to get rid of that and get, even if it's worse talent, you have to get consistency. You know what I mean? Because it's costing us games.
I don't know if I agree with you there on worst talent, because I mean, if you want to say, well, we don't think this guy will ever be consistent enough to be of value to us, right? Like, we can't predict when he's going to be on, so we can't rely on him, so we want to get rid of him. That's an argument I can understand, but I don't think you want to go for less talent, because
what I mean by that is, like, so a lot of people are talking about trading Montgomery, right? Montgomery went statistically has been one of our best starters this season. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you get rid of Montgomery, but what I'm saying,
but the problem is he's a free agent to be. So that's the problem.
I understand that. Right. But I'm using this as an example, right? Montgomery is to me has a lower ceiling than Jack Flaherty. Cause when Jack Flaherty has been on, he's been unbelievable. Right. Montgomery never showed flashes like that. That's what I mean by not as good. I'm just talking about the potential. You know what I mean?
No, I got you.
Yeah.
That's what I meant by that. Yeah.
No, I got you. But, you know, I have my suspicions also with the pitching staff as to there being something off, you know, because I mean, you're having a lot of guys shit in the bed that were rock solid last year. You know what I'm saying? It's all like a lot of them. It's not like it's just one or two guys that are having a bad year. They're all down, basically. So that makes me
super funny.
Have a lot of doubt about Dusty Blake as a pitching coach.
Yes, I agree. And it's super funny, OJ, because I remember when we were like growing up, here comes Isringhausen, right? And as good as Isringhausen was, it always seemed to be that he would walk the base, like the bases loaded, and then strike out three in a row. You know what I mean? He always kept you on your toes. And it feels like that for every single fucking relief pitcher that comes in. I mean, Adam, when we were at the game, here comes Pallante.
Oh, and you're like, gosh. All right,
which Pallante are we going to see? He walks fucking bases loaded, goes down 3-0 in a game that we're up by one run. He ends up striking the guy out. But you're like, holy crap.
Yeah, and we're like, thank God, finally. But dude, it was like, it was intense, you know?
But do you remember what I said to you? Here comes Hennis Cabrera, and I'm like, he's gonna blow it.
Yeah.
And sure enough, fucking blows it. He gives up two home runs and four runs. It's like, oh my God, you gotta be kidding me. Anyways, that's just kind of how it feels, man. And a lot of passion for me is coming out. Yeah. I'm cursing a lot more on this podcast.
You were
heated. I'm so adamant, but
heated after that game, that's for sure.
Even the losses, I keep the scorecards. I always keep score when I'm at the games with a scorecard. You know, I feel it's a Cardinal tradition. You know, it's only $3 with, you know, scorecard and the pencil. I do it. It keeps me engaged. I really enjoy doing it, and it helps me. You know, I put it in my memory box and stuff. I literally completed the damn scorecard, ripped it in half. I was so pissed at that game. Mm-hmm. Oh, I couldn't do it. Could not pencil do it.
Too.
Yeah, I did.
Went to hell.
The pencil four times. Yeah.
To hell. You were very pissed about that game.
Because
it was so disappointing, you know, to like see us that we actually have a real chance of winning this, and then just to go blow it like that, you know, in the eighth.
Yeah.
Just once again, because we see it like this time and time again. Get your hopes up, and then just to see it quickly dashed away.
Yep. All right, so let's transition here and talk about the Contreras report. We talked a little bit about this, or at least hinted around it. So for anybody that does not know and hasn't read this. There was a report that came from one of the analysts from the Yes Network, which is the Yankees network, their own internal broadcast network, where the analyst said that he had heard from other players that he was calling for pitches that the pitching staff of the Cardinals did not have, for cutter and stuff like that. He said that he was calling for cutters a lot where pitchers did not have cutters. And the other thing about this too, with the new system built into where they're using the comm systems, you know, rather than using the signals and stuff, it's a lot harder to shake off a pitch and stuff like that, because you can shake it off, but you only have a certain amount of time to pitch. So eventually you're going to have to pitch something.
Right.
And that's why, you know, Contreras sometimes looks like he's prepared for a certain pitch and not getting that pitch. But I tell you right now, that is unbelievably, unbelievably embarrassing. And the thing about it is, it's now been confirmed by several people that this has been going on. It's the reason why Jack Flaherty does not want Contreras behind the plate for him.
Hold on, though. So let me clarify this. So the thing is, he thinks he's calling for a cutter, right? Because if they're doing like a beep system and your pitcher has four pitches, you probably have 1, 2, 3, 4 beeps or something like that, right?
Right. Something.
So
something,
he thinks we don't he's know calling for one pitch, but he doesn't know what pitch that pitcher is actually going to throw. Is that what you're telling me? That would explain the passed balls, because like I've never seen so many passed balls from somebody that claims to be a catcher.
He has this season as a professional catcher, he has 13 passed balls. 13. We're not even at the fucking the All-Star game. 13 pass balls. I'm like, this is the worst contract that we've ever signed. What? You know, not to mention the largest contract we've ever signed for somebody outside of our organization, but this is the worst contract I think we've ever seen.
If a piece of technology is what the problem is, then I mean, that's something that he could easily fix. You know, get the proper
training. Fingernails.
That's what I'm saying. Even if he's throwing down signs between his legs, it's still going to – I mean, they're not – he's not saying throw me a cutter. He's saying throw me, like, whatever, you know, whatever this sign is. He's, give me the number one or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the point is he thinks he's calling for one pitch, and the pitcher probably doesn't throw that pitch, so he thinks he's calling for a different pitch. And then
From the pitcher's side, they actually hear them say – you know, or it will literally describe to them as saying like a high fastball or a low curveball or whatever.
Oh, really?
It depends. It depends on the pitcher, and it depends on the organization.
Okay. Well, I'm reading here that this was how the MLB was doing this, but maybe there are differences.
I didn't know how it worked. Exactly. I was making
pitchcom is the way I understand.
Yes. And so there's been a lot of different, because when it came into it, Adam, you're 100% right that that's what it was. And I'm sure a lot of pitchers keep that way. But there are a lot of pitchers in the MLB that are very, like, superstitious. Not even superstitious, but they're very suspicious of the other team. So they don't
I'm very leery of pitch comp. Like, you think people aren't trying to fucking hack those, like, intercept those signals? Yeah, like,
exactly.
Dude, you know people are doing
that. If I was pitching, there's no way in hell I'd use a pitch comp. Give me the fingers. No way in hell I'm using a pitch comp. You're saying.
Give him the finger.
And that's just me.
The easy way you fix that problem with cheating is you hold those teams accountable and you remove that trophy from their collection.
Yeah.
So, well, it doesn't matter, I'm looking at you, Houston. You'd be held accountable for this shit.
I mean, so. I'm pretty sure that's got to be some kind of federal law, right?
Absolutely. It should be. 100%, because you have money riding on these things, and the fact is that you're cheating people out of money.
Racketeering, man.
Absolutely, it is.
Well, anything's racketeering, right?
But I'm just saying, you have money on this stuff, and the fact is that this is affecting their pay and everything else. So that could be some serious shit, you know.
I do wonder if these are encrypted or not, or if they're just.
Well, I'm sure they have 100%.
They're 100% encrypted for that specific team, and each team has their own individual like IT support.
It has industrial grade encryption algorithms.
Think they all get
minimal,
like,
data digitally. It's what I'm reading here.
Yeah. Okay, so, that's good. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, hacking the system is virtually impossible. They're reading. That's what I'm reading.
Yeah, exactly.
Virtually, let's put it. Well, we all know there's no such thing as impossible to hack.
Well, the fact is that it has an algorithm that it's using. So therefore, unless you can crack their specific algorithm for that specific team, you know, it's going to be mathematically pretty hard to crack, you know?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it's extremely difficult. But I mean, if you get some brilliant people and say, I want you to do this, they're going to figure it out, given enough time.
Well, yeah, of course. Of course. But
you,
I mean,
but I'm just saying, if somebody gets caught doing that, that is going to be some serious jail time, because serious.
Well,
jail.
That person specifically, right? You're 100%. But here's the thing.
Well, yeah,
Adam,
the organization,
like, too. Obviously, banging a trash can, stuff like that.
But there wasn't
anything.
Yeah, but the thing is okay, that's one thing, but actually taking it to another level of hacking, you know?
Yeah. That, like, intercepting.
That is true. I'll give you that.
You know what I mean? Okay. Banging a trash can, while it is cheating, absolutely, but hacking.
That's like hacking into the email and all that stuff. No, I get it. That's
a whole new level. You know what I mean?
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, and that's what I'm getting at. So, I mean, with the amount of
money. They were trying to skirt around the rules and say, okay, we're looking at signs and this and that. We're going to try to communicate it to them, but they're hacking people's shit. Ooh.
Yeah.
That's going to be pretty serious.
But this, I'm telling you, this is state of the art. So the Astros are no longer using trash cans; they're using recycling bins.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Good God. Yeah, I know, a stupid joke, but I make myself.
But the
laugh.
Point is that if that is indeed the case that Contreras was calling for pitches that clearly our pitching staff don't, you know, they just don't have in their arsenal.
He wasn't prepared for this season. He wasn't prepared for this season at all.
Exactly.
Like, that's what it looks like to me.
Though. That seems like, you know, that's like it being a quarterback and learning the playbook. You know what I mean? Like, that's the bare minimum.
You essentially are the. Exactly, OJ. To your point, that's a very good comparison because you're essentially the quarterback on the field. You know what I mean? You have to know what your pitchers are capable of pitching, and you don't do that. That just shows that you have no will to learn, and that you just don't care. I'm just going to go in there. I'm just going to do my thing. Bullshit. Like you're reliant on other people, and those people are relying on you. It's not like you can go out there and like be center field and not like, you know what? I don't need a cheat sheet. You know what I mean? That's one thing,
right?
You know, to know this guy leans a little bit more to the right or is like left depending. I'm just going to rely on my skills and stuff like that. That is one thing, right? I don't agree with that either, but that's one thing completely different than a catcher and a pitcher. It's like going up in a pitcher and like telling the catcher, hey, all right, so I have a two seam, I have a cutter, and I have a changeup. When you really have a four seam, a slider, and a split ball. You know what I mean? Like, where's the catcher going to understand then?
All he needs to do is just literally go to the pitching coach, say, give me the book, the playbook here, you know, give me everybody's pitches, go down, you know, he's been sent down, go study this, you know, test him on it, and then let's, you know, and go from there, you know. Here's but it's like, these are simple, stupid things, you know what I mean?
Here's the fucked up thing about this. He actually hit against the Cardinals very well last season with the Cubs, right? That means he had to have studied what the pitchers were throwing at him. So he has to fucking know what they can throw.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what none of this makes any sense. It's crazy.
Just cares about hitting, it sounds like.
Exactly.
Like, and he sucks at that even right now. About him. I don't want to hear it.
I saw people saying this about him this offseason. Cubs fans. So, I mean, fans are always super salty about players that are leaving a lot of the time. So I was like, you know, I wasn't super reliant on it, but they were saying that part of the reason that the Cubs wanted to let him go is because they thought he cared way more about hitting than catching. And from what some of the things I've read, it sounds like that's what he convinced John Mozeliak that's not true. When he went down and talked to him, Contreras convinced him that he took catching seriously and cared about it and all that. And then, you know, he came over in spring training and he stayed the entire spring training with the Cardinals trying to learn what pitchers he could. So it seems like he put some effort into it. But, you know, that's the thing. If he's sitting there spending all his time in hitters meetings and skipping the pitchers meetings, then that's not what we want in a catcher either.
No, at all. Not at all. Because at that point in time, that's when you just rely on your natural ability. You know what I mean? Because he's a naturally good hitter, although he sucks this year.
Yeah, he's not giving us anything.
We're actually
positive.
Making him catch a lot. The problem is when he last year with the Cubs, I think he didn't catch very many games at all. He DH'd a lot more.
That's what I'm saying.
He could be a good DH.
We don't need him to be our DH. We need a catcher.
Yeah. We have a much better chance of winning, I think, with him at DH.
Because that's what I'm saying.
He wasn't Andrew hired for Fisner that job. Is not that's the problem.
Yeah, exactly. And the problem with it too is, so you can't put him at DH for $85 million. You know what I mean? Like,
that's what I'm saying. He was not hired for that. That's
you
totally...
might have to at this point. That's the problem.
Well, you're right. Right, exactly, because you have nothing to lose, right, at this point in time. So I agree with that. Yeah,
that's assuming all this is 100% true. Like, if he really has been doing that, then you pretty much need to just start putting him at DH and cross your fingers that Ivan Herrera is ready, and like just roll with him and Kisner because they at least take the catching part of the job seriously, and just let Contreras DH, and he'll, you know, because when he was DHing more than catching, he was raking, dude. Like, you know, he would absolutely be very valuable to the team as a DH, even though he'd be substantially overpaid. So,
well, I mean, I'd say at this point we just need to give Yachty a call, you know, and just be like, hey, can you come back for just like a half a season, you know?
I mean, yeah, at this point he would be better.
I guarantee you, Yachty's sitting there going, "Oh my god, like this is embarrassing. What happens when I leave?"
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I mean, did we talk about the shameful behavior of the folks on Twitter that apparently made Wainwright delete
his Twitter account? Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, he disabled his Twitter account.
Yeah.
Like, come on, dude.
Speaking of which, there's some horrible but I have to say it was kind of funny. There were some people shading Waino on and also Contreras too on Reddit. I was literally just reading this about Contreras reportedly being taken off catcher for calling pitches not in pitching arsenal. And somebody posted, well, apparently he kept calling for fastballs with Waino pitching, but he doesn't have that pitch in his arsenal. I was like, fucking brutal.
That is hilarious. I think Waino's body's giving up on him at this point. It's a shame. Like, I think he's mostly topping out at like 86.
Yeah.
Not even 89. Like, he's at batting practice speed now. Like, it's kind of hard to get by when you're
showing. I feel that. Like, I'm just like, dude, I really wish you would have just retired last year and, you know, retired on a high. Yeah. But this is just painful to watch, you know?
Yeah.
It's so painful to watch.
Well, he was
deteriorating.
I'm sure he was very confident that he was going to come back healthy and be able to perform
like
he did last year.
It just sucks to see this, you know, like at the very end, you know, just like, man. Yeah.
Well, and it's funny too, because he's like, you know, I have unfinished business. Why he came back? Well,
let's he wanted 200 and is going to stay unfinished. Yeah. I get it.
It's unfortunate.
And I also just want to point out, because I know we're going to be transitioning about who to be holding on the hot seat or not. The fact is that he was pitching and had a horrible outing once again, but then comes out and they say that he's injured. And I'm like, who allowed him to pitch if he was injured?
Yeah,
why isn't, I mean, who's going to be held accountable for that? You know what I mean?
It depends what the injury is. I mean, especially when you get older.
Then he's eyeing the IL for what? How many games now? Like 10 or 15 or something?
Yeah, he needs to go there. Like, that's the thing.
For sure.
He needs to, like, have a minor league stint or something. But he needs to get right before he can come back on the field. That's for sure.
Yeah. But I just felt that putting him out there injured was a horrible call. I don't know.
It really depends what the injury was.
Apparently multiple issues. Mm-hmm. Let me see. What did they say? I'm reading here, unless somebody already knows off the top of their head.
No, I don't. I
think of someone with the shoulder, but
could be.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is when you get old like that, teams are gonna, you know, like if I was
shoulder
a man,
injury, that's what it was.
Give those guys a little more leeway to go push themselves despite having an injury. Mm-hmm. But like, obviously, they went way over the line here. That's kind of you're right, Adam. Like, he's hurting the team to such an extent. How are you going to just keep trotting out there?
Yeah.
Like, you have a responsibility to every other player on the team, too. They all want to win. So, like, as much as you love Waino, you have to do what's right for the majority. It sucks. But that's baseball. Mm. I mean, that's professional sports.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know he's vowing a return, but it's like, dude, if you continue to play like this, we can't let you return. I mean, I'm sorry, but no offense to Waino, but it sounds like it's a personal thing that you want to achieve instead of for the team, you know?
Yeah. You're looking for 200.
He's a competitor.
Yeah, he's looking for 200, and that's
for
the thing.
Sure. Yeah.
He wants 200 career wins, and I'm sorry, but
I think the main reason he came back is because of how the playoffs went last year, too. Because
that's my thing. I really don't think he was – like, he wants 200, but I think it left a very bad taste in his mouth that he felt this team could go further on. And he didn't announce retirement like Yachty and Pujols did, obviously.
Yeah.
So I think that he felt, you know, like, okay, cool. And the other thing about it, too, is – and this is – like, and I thought about this long and hard, right? So I'm like, okay, you have two of your best buddies, especially, the Batman – or the Robin to your Batman and Yadier that's deciding to retire. I personally would be like, you know what, even if it you know, really hurts or whatever, and like I don't want to, I'll come back for one more year. So he goes out and has his own separate thing, and I'll have my own separate thing. So it's not about all, you know, like, again, like, oh, these two guys are going out at the same time kind of thing. You know what I mean? I would let him have his limelight, because we know, like, Wainwright specifically doesn't like the limelight. You know what I mean? He doesn't like that. I mean,
well, he still got it anyway last year, this year, no matter if he liked it or not. He still got it last year because, I mean, let's face it, they all three were highlighted because of those, you know, the fact is he was connected with Yachty.
But
I understand your point, but.
Yeah, because like, but see how they handled it, right? So when everything was going well, especially with Pujols and Molina, are you going to come back for another year? Have you really thought about, you know, reversing the retirement? Nope. And then every time somebody asks Wainwright, so are you coming back next year?
But this is the thing, he doesn't have to answer that question during the middle of the season. He could have just literally said at the end of the season, all right, that was it, and then to be done with it. No, and then it would have been the offseason.
Yeah, I remember an interview with him where he said that he was going to retire after last season, but then didn't like the way it ended, and he wanted to come back and make a playoff push again. But no, his plan was to retire, according to him, but he also, like you said, he doesn't want to be in the center of the spotlight. So that's really more what it was. I think he just didn't want to have to have all the fanfare and stuff with that. Like he said, he actually said, like, let Yachty and Albert get that stuff, you know. That's what I heard, read. I mean,
mm-hmm. Well, listen, you know, it is what it is at this point in time, and hopefully he does come back, and hopefully he can get to 200 wins or whatever, and hopefully he can.
It's two wins away. I don't know. The season's wrapping up quick. It's already July the 6th, and
he's gonna have to come back soon. Yeah,
he's going to have come back soon, and he's going to have to come back with his shoulder feeling a lot better.
Yeah, I agree.
So,
yeah. Let's get to our last topic here for the Cardinals here. Should Mozeliak be fired? So we've already talked a lot about Marmol, but, you know, and I have a long – this is me personally. I have a long leash for Mozeliak, but I'm really thinking that Mozeliak needs to go. He didn't make any of the offseason adjustments. We talked about this guy's coming into the season. When we first started the podcast and stuff like that we needed pitching. We had to get pitching. We needed pitching. And he doesn't do anything. And, you know, he goes out and gets – and you can't blame Mozeliak completely for the Contreras debacle that it's been. But that was your only offseason move.
Yeah.
You know, so it just looks so bad. And you've been so unwilling to go out in free agency. Now, that being said, the reason why I have a long leash personally from Mozeliak, he did bring in Nolan Arenado. And let's be honest. We bent Colorado over in the woods to get Nolan Arenado. I mean, we literally just stole Arenado from the Colorado Rockies. We did, you know, go out and get in free agency. We did get, or actually, no, was it a trade? I can't remember with the Diamondbacks or if that was a free agency.
It was a trade with the Diamondbacks for Goldschmidt.
It was a trade. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Goldschmidt had one year left. So all we had to give up was Carson Kelly, Luke Weaver, and I think there's somebody else. And then as soon as we traded for him, we extended
him. We signed him. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's exactly what it was. Yeah. So I knew it's obviously been a few years, but I do remember that's what it was kind of, you know, was he a free agent or not? But now that you said that, I'm like, yeah, that brought it all back. But he has brought in a lot of good players and stuff like that for the team. But to me, it's not been in the offseason. It's always been in in-season trades and stuff. But, you know, after losing out on Juan Soto last year, and let's be honest, you know, the Padres obviously were able to give up more than what we were willing to give up, I guess. It's still to me, there has to be a change. There has to be a change. I think the Marmol and Mozeliak should be gone. Adam, what's your opinions?
I really think I'm going to give him a month because the trade deadline's coming up August the 1st. I'll give him until the trade deadline to see what his plan is to make improvements. He said he's not in any kind of rebuild mode. He's into just making improvements. I want to see what those improvements really are. What is his plan going forward for this season and especially for next season? Because I was very disappointed with, you know, the offseason, like you were just saying. I understand they don't want to blow this team up, but I want to see what is his plan going forward to find ways to improve this team. So I'll give him a month.
I'll get back to you on, you know, the 1st of August. I'm not very happy with him right now, but I'll give him this. And at that point, it's either make or break it for me. I mean, it's literally like, if he disappoints the fans once again, during, you know, during this month, especially with the trade line coming up, I say it's time for heads to roll, and he can hit the road. Same with Ollie as well. But if he can, you know, make some amazing, I'm not even talking about to the level of Arenado type of trades, but specifically addressing a lot of the pain points that we have been all talking about. If he can start addressing those points, then I would give him a chance. But until I see that, okay, he's on my shit list.
Yeah, fair enough. OJ, what's your thoughts on Mazalak?
Yeah, so I'm actually with you, Josh. I going into the season, I kind of felt like Mazalak was one of the better GMs in baseball, because we can't spend like some of the top spending teams or anything like that, and we still had a pretty good team together. You know, we had best two corner infielders in the league, and we had, you know, really a lot of good players, and we had a bunch of young guys coming up to supplement them right around the corner. And it's like, well, so we're going to be really good. We're going to be really good for a long time. And then the season happened. And so really it depends what his actual job is. So if he's more of like acquiring players and stuff, I think he's done a good job, because I think this roster should be performing much better than it is.
Much better. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So I like that. Even he's had some flops for signings. He's made the Ozuna trade was disastrous.
Yeah,
but every GM's gonna make bad moves from time to time. No one's gonna be perfect. You can't, like, there's a lot of smart GMs out there. You're not gonna be able to get all of them all the time. And there's also just luck involved. So, you know, over that side of things, I'm okay with. I'm questioning his hire of Dustin Blake.
We're just now starting? Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that to me seems like just a complete miscalculation. But again, we don't know how much of that is a financial restriction as well, because we've got to figure DeWitt's probably holding pretty tight to the purse strings given Bally falling through and all that stuff. So, you know, they haven't been getting paid. Not only that, they own part of that company, which is going under.
Yeah.
So, like, they're not in a great spot financially. So it might have been, oh, we're going to not commit much money to coaching staff. We're going to try and put that in players. And so you go get Contreras, and now you just get, you know, no-name guys and just hope that you can roll with them. So, you know, we don't fully know all the details. I don't like Dusty Blake as a coach. I think I am assuming that he's a big part of the pitching problems, only based on the performance of the staff this year. Overall, the bullpen and the starters, a lot of them performed much better last season than they are this season.
With Mike Maddox.
Exactly. So to me, Dusty Blake's probably part of the problem. The offense has been good enough most nights to win, and that's all I can really ask for. So I'm happy with that. And, you know, we've got some good pitchers coming up in the pipeline, so I like how we draft. Really, my biggest concern outside of Dusty Blake is the fact that they seem to have not focused on the fundamentals this season, because that's part of what made it fun to watch them, whether they won or lost, is they played good baseball. You know,
they played Cardinals baseball.
Yeah, if they got beat, they got beat, but they didn't beat themselves, and they were never embarrassing to watch. You know what I mean? It's embarrassing.
Yeah, and they made the other team earn the win.
Exactly. Yeah. This team is embarrassing to watch some nights because they look like just a hapless organization, like the Pirates. You know, like, so
last night reminded me of watching Major League. You know, that's what it reminded me of. I'm like, this is Major League before they all of a sudden decide to turn it on. And which also, too, by the way, it's funny because I just watched Major League not too long ago. They were 20 games out and they somehow come back and win the pennant. I'm like, so you're telling me the Yankees, who like were, you know, their major rival in that movie or whatever, they went like less than 500 the rest of the season. I'm like, yeah, okay, that doesn't make any sense. It's just those like movie things. But anyway, I know. I'm sorry, but yeah, it's just, I literally just watched it like not last night, but the night before. But anyway,
do you guys believe all the unrealistic parts of Major League?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Oh boy,
can't hit a curveball.
Yeah, but anyway, my main point is that if John Mozeliak is the guy that was telling him, hey, don't worry about base running and defense, then I want him gone, because that's atrocious. Yeah,
for sure.
If it was Ali Marvel's decision, then I want him gone. Whoever made that decision needs to be gone yesterday, because that's not how you win baseball games.
Agreed. All right, guys. Well, let's transition here to the last topic we have about STLSC. It's a much shorter thing, because obviously this is the only good team in St. Louis that we have right now. Yeah. Besides the Battlehawks, which were good last year, obviously, but they're not playing. So a little bit of an update. City is 11-2-7 this season with a goal differential of 15, plus 15. So they're doing really good. 35 total points. They're rocking it. They're first in the West with a game in hand, by the way, on Seattle. Mm-hmm. There's 14 games left. They are 9 points ahead of the eighth spot. So here's the way that works. At least for the adjustments they've made now for the for STL, SC, and Charlotte that's going to be coming in, that it is going to be 14 teams that are in the playoffs, but the number one team in the West, number one team in the East, will automatically go to the next round. And essentially, there's like a little bit of like a mini play-in tournament there with the next 2-7. So really we're trying to look at the AC. So we're 9 points ahead. That means that three total wins ahead of, I think it's Austin. It's not Austin, because Austin's been on the streak. I can't remember who it is. It doesn't matter, but we're 9 points ahead of that AC with 14 games left to go. Obviously there's still a lot to go, but we're doing really well. The one thing I did want to bring up here, there was a report that came out just, I think it was yesterday or the day before, for ESPN's watchability rankings report. So this report is essentially, this is on a grade from 0 to 10, the watchability of an MLS team. And then they also give them like their European equivalent and stuff like that. This is written by a guy that covered La Liga, which is the French league. La Liga is the Spanish league in Spain, and Bundesliga in Germany for quite a long time, actually. St. Louis City, 9.7, number one in MLS for watchability rankings, which is phenomenal. And I'm actually going to read the report real quick to you guys. Actually, let me see if I can get the author's name real quick before. Actually, no, I'm going to read this off and I'll get to that, because I got to go scroll all the way up. But this is the report, what he says. In naming longtime Bundesliga staffer Lutz, and I cannot pronounce this, Penefestel, as the sporting director, hiring former Bundesliga defender and in manager Bradley Carnell, and bringing in players with Bundesliga experience like goalkeeper Roman Bürki and midfielder Edward Luan, it was clear in how St. Louis City was modeling itself as it prepared for its first MLS season. And considering the Bundesliga is the most consistently watchable of the Europe's big leagues, which I disagree with, but that's neither here nor there, that's a pretty good model to follow. They've had an up-and-down season after a sizzling start, but they're ridiculously direct in attack, intense in defense, and they score lots of goals. No complaints here. The European equivalent for the St. Louis City is Mainz, which is a very good Bundesliga team. I enjoy this one because Mainz, is basically the perfectly average Bundesliga team, both quality and style, and the vision that they had came to fruition. So I'm going to ask you guys here, do you agree with that kind of take here, mm-hmm. that we're pretty direct in our attack and that we're intense on our defense? I know that we're all going to agree that this is definitely the best team to watch right now, right?
Well, of course they are. I mean, they're a lot of fun to watch for sure. No doubt about it. Yeah. And I love their ability, you know, how they, they're very aggressive in their offense as well, and they're constantly passing the ball, mm-hmm. and you know they are always looking for scoring opportunities, you know, and even whenever we're down, you know,
you know, we have some injuries.
Even we're down two goals. I feel like we're still in the mix.
We're
of it,
still in the game.
I mean? Like, I feel like we
they
just
don't give up.
Time. Yeah.
These guys not literally ever. Play a full Effort. 90 minutes every game.
Plus.
Yeah, yep, plus, agreed. For sure. You know, like they don't give up. And I have to say, that's really great to see a team in St. Louis that actually doesn't give up until and sees it through all the way to the very end. That's my opinion.
And by the way, before OJ, I'm going to go to you here, but I just want to give this guy his credit. So that was Bill Conley, who is an ESPN staff writer. Again, he's been covering, you know, like big time soccer for a long time. Mm-hmm. OJ, what's your thoughts on that report? I mean, do you agree with his take on us comparing us to some of the Bundesliga's team?
Sure. I mean, I don't watch Bundesliga, but I assume that, well, from what I know, what I've heard of them is that they like to play that kind of style generally.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm happy with the comparison for sure. And I mean, we did have a very, very direct attacking style. I mean, I believe that was created in the German league, if I'm not mistaken. I could be.
Danny mentioned that, didn't he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, he did.
That's what I thought. So, like, yeah.
Forgot the German name for it, but yeah.
German style of play. Mm-hmm. I like it, you know, and it's very fun to watch. Like you said, they bust their asses and they play good soccer. And that's another thing. They have way more skill than anyone thought they were going to have. Like,
oh, yeah, they do. And continuity, too. That's the biggest 100%. Thing with new teams, especially in soccer. It's so hard to have that continuity. You know what I mean? But they have perfect continuity. Like, they've been playing together for 10 years. It's excellent to watch. Yeah.
A good portion of them did play together last year on City 2.
For sure.
I mean, certainly not
saying.
All the starters. But, yeah, no, yeah. They've kind of established their system now, and they've been adding to it and everything as the season's gone on, which is making them a more versatile team, which is – like, they've been evolving as a team. They're not just, like, only an energy team. You know, they'll give you the energy, but they have much more to offer than just that. So, like, it's very impressive, very fun to watch. And despite being out Klaus and Leuven, they've still won the last two games. And, I mean, convincingly. I mean, they beat San Jose. Colorado's pretty bad, and they still crushed them. I mean, they only won 2-0, but it could have been 5 with all the opportunities Joachini had. Like,
agreed. But we also lost to Colorado earlier in the season, too. You know what I mean? So that just shows you, like, again, that we came with a vengeance. And, you know, and I didn't mean to cut you off, OJ. I apologize. But, like, the game that Adam and I went to was against Houston, wasn't it?
Houston. Mm-hmm. It was against Houston.
Yeah. But we won 3-0. But I tell you right now, that even in the 89th minute, they were pushing for a fourth goal. They were trying to score as many goals as possible.
100%.
And they were not resting on their laurels. Nope. That's what this team is. They don't rest on their laurels. They want the excitement, but they want to keep pressure, putting the pressure. They want to step on your neck until they know your breath is out. Yep. And that is what you have to have, especially when we see the playoffs. I'm telling you right now, I think they're going to surprise some people in the playoffs.
I know they are. I really do feel that. I mean, look, so – you know, you look at some of the guys that have stepped up since. So they got that Sam Adeniran back from loan, like the last couple of games. And he's like a Klaus-sized dude, but he's way faster. And he's already made some pretty sick plays. He had a 2-goal game, like his first game, and then he had a really sick assist against Colorado on a Stroud's goal. So, like, it's like, holy crap, we had this dude and we weren't even playing him. You know, you got Aziel Jackson. He's gotten in as a sub in some games before, but he never really seemed to do a whole lot. But he stepped it up, too. Like, he's been all over the place. I don't know. It seems like they've got good players that aren't even starters for them. Like, what? I don't understand how they pulled this off. But it seems like the people running the team really know what they're doing.
So, excuse me, guys. Just sitting there sneezing. My bad. I'm telling you right now, I really do believe that Roman Berkey, our goaltender, I think he needs to be in the MVP conversation. He's been
absolutely
so good, but not only as good as a goaltender, but as a general literally a floor general for the defensive set. In set pieces, when you watch him, he's constantly moving all the way up until the ball is kicked. At that point in time, obviously, he tries to get in position, but he's constantly directing the defenders, and he is constantly spewing it out. I love Berkey. Yeah, I mean,
there's a reason why he's on the All-Star roster, so, you know.
Agreed. He should be first team start. He should be the starter for the All-Star too. He's ridiculous. 100%.
And the dude gave up millions to play here as well. And that's what I'm saying.
I don't understand why he's not playing in a better league. Like, right? That's how good he is. So yeah, he's been insane.
Because he didn't want to be a backup. He wanted to come here. He was very much like AJ McCarron for the Battlehawks. Mm-hmm. He wanted to be a starter. And I'm telling you right now, Berkey specifically was overwhelmed by the support that he has been getting from St. Louis. And he, you know, because there's a lot of questions of, okay, why are you, obviously he's on contract, I think 3 years, but you know, like, are you going to be trying to, you know, muscle your way into a different league and stuff like that? And he's been pretty adamant that he really wants to stay here for right now. So
he does.
We'll see how that goes.
Whenever he was with Dortmund and I'm reading here, they signed a young goalkeeper, you know, in the summer of 21. And basically at that point, his play time significantly decreased. And by 2022, he was no longer really required for his services. And that's whenever City were in search for a goalkeeper of his caliber. And they offered him $6.5 million at Dortmund. But then he instead said, well, I'd rather be out there and playing. And he took $1.63 million a year to be transferred to City.
I just can't believe that there was no league.
He doesn't care about the money. He just wants to play. He literally came out and said that. The dude's like, I could have sat there and had a really good contract in Dortmund for 2 years. But he didn't care. He said, I want to play, you know?
Yeah, I just can't believe that there was no other team in any of the leagues that are better than the MLS that we're going to wouldn't let him be a starter. I just don't understand that. The dude's clearly a phenomenal goalie. Like, I don't care if he's an MLS or not. The dude knows what he's doing, and he's a leader.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. So I'm telling you,
I'm translated to other St. Louis sports right now.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. Damn. Like, I really believe that, you know, Robert Thomas and Jordan Kyrou need to take example of this guy and just be like, all right, well, you know. Yeah, and look at AJ McCarron too, you know, who is just the MVP of the XFL. Like, obviously we got screwed out of a playoff spot.
We did.
But we're not going to get into that topic.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you right now, when you take a look at the two teams that we'll say are less in the spotlight than, you know, the Cardinals and the Blues for obvious reasons, those two teams are paving the way for what St. Louis sports has always been about. I mean, let's not forget, too. So our last two World Series wins, right? 2006 and 2011. Yep. Who were the fucking MVPs? 2006, David Eckstein, and 2011, David Freese.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, that is the sports that we have to have, man. Yeah, I'm just telling you, the sports players that
it's always a small, it's always the little guys that always come to shine in the playoffs, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Always is.
Agreed. And Ryan O'Reilly, too, who earned the Conn Smythe, although, to be honest with you, I really believe that Jordan Binnington earned the Conn Smythe, but not to take away from the amazing, amazing Stanley Cup final that Ryan O'Reilly had. But Ryan O'Reilly did it the right way, too. He was very good on the defensive side, obviously was very good in the faceoff, and scored a lot of goals. He was the first person since Gretzky to score one goal in four consecutive games in the final. And yes, I was talking to my dog. Sorry. He started whining because he thought I'd talk to him.
He's like, what? But
anyways. He was just like, what? You're talking to me? Anyways. But yeah, so I'm telling you, I'm very excited for STLSC. I'm excited for the playoffs because at this point, I really believe it's almost a given that we're going to get there.
Oh, nothing we are. I just looked it up.
It would be hard for them not
status,
to.
Playoffstatus.com has us 98% chance of being in a playoff spot.
98, yeah.
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 Because there's still 14 games left. That's a lot, but yeah.
I remember early in the season, people were talking like 44 points or something is probably what you need to make the playoffs. And how many do we have?
47 is
worth 35.
35, where we need like 47 the rest of the season. Like, it definitely would be hard not to make the playoffs at this point.
Oh, it is 47.
Okay. Oh.
Knock on wood, of course.
Yeah, I mean, we have a 45% right now as it stands, we have a 45% chance of landing the first, you know, never, you know, finishing in first
overall seed,
and overall seed, and that where we would get the first round bye and also the second round home field advantage as well.
And I just want to say that St. Louis City SC has convinced me, like, they're just a good team. Like, I think they could go for the championship this
year. Absolutely, they can. They have a real chance at it for sure.
Yeah, because I think last time we talked about them, it was right after Leuven went down. And so I know that they were going to struggle pretty hard.
And the fact is that these guys should be coming back you know, next month or so, next month into September, you know, after this month, as things, you know, start picking back up again as well. So, you know, cause we're only playing like, I think 3 games this month or whatever. So playing one on this weekend. And then I think like the following week, a couple games and that's it, you know? So,
They've got this, they got the League's Cup.
We're off basically from the 15th of July, you know, 16th of July, and then we don't play again until August 20th. So we've got plenty of time for those guys to basically heal up and get back in the swing of things. And then, you know, we'll finish out the season then at that point.
I mean, I want this squad to try and get like in the CONCACAF. I want them to try and get in the CONCACAF Champions League. Mm-hmm. Might as awesome, well, right?
Yeah.
They could definitely have a chance. Do it. That's the thing. I mean, it's not a chance. Like, they are in a spot now. Like, if the season ended today, they would qualify for it.
That's for sure. Yeah. Yeah, I know.
So
that,
that's what I'm saying. Like, that's what I want to see. If I'm there, I'm like, let's go for it. So let's crush Mexico up here. Not that it necessarily has any bearing on that, but let's go crush these Mexican teams. And, well, I guess everybody, I guess it's just a tournament between all of them. But it's, I think it would be cool to see them playing a Mexican team. Especially considering it's their first year existing officially. Like, I want to see how they measure up.
I agree. It's going to be interesting for sure. You know, see what ends up happening with STL, SE in their season and stuff. But obviously, it's been awesome to have. I know that we'll probably have a watch party for one of these games in the playoffs or something like that. I'll probably host something here because, I mean, it's just awesome to watch them. And it's just exciting because you always feel like they're going to win. So. Or at least they're in it. You know what I mean? So
I mean, every game I watch, I don't care if they're down. It's still fun to watch them.
Like, exactly. But again, some of that comes from the belief that you believe they can come back, you know?
Yeah. The only one that kind of pissed me off was the Nashville game. It had nothing to do with the team. It was that I felt like it was kind of bullshit us having a red card. And I thought that was dumb because I didn't think the first yellow Hebert got was really deserved. So then they called the second yellow in the box. Red card,
which he deserved. Yeah, he deserved the second yellow, but
you know, that was definitely that was a hard foul. But
yeah,
I don't think it deserved a red. Instead, we're down a player and you're giving them a penalty shot. So now we're just down a goal and we're down a player. So we basically can't come back and win. Like the ref basically decided the game then there. So that kind of pissed me off.
I agree. Well, guys, let's go ahead and head to our sign off here. This has almost been 2 hours here for an hour session.
Well, yeah, I guess we're making up for last week.
Split it up.
Exactly. There we go. Get a lot to talk about. All right, Adam, why don't you tell the good listeners here what our socials are?
The great listeners of the Hometown Losers can, of course, hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/thehometownlosers. Or just type it in the search on Facebook, type in the Hometown Losers and make sure you spell it LOUSERS. Or check us out on Twitter at twitter.com/hometownlosers. Give us a like, give us a share, interact with us. We love to hear from you.
Absolutely. OJ, what do you have for the game of the week?
The only team worth talking about in St. Louis right now, St. Louis City Saturday, SC at Toronto FC, Saturday, 6:30 p.m. Central Time.
There we go.
Let's go.
It should be a good game, too, at least for us.
Yeah, Toronto's hopefully kind of scuffling this season so far.
I know, yeah. So far, but, you know, you can never take anything for granted. Hey, and the beautiful game is what the Europeans will call it.
Ought to be our first game against the Great White North, so.
For sure. Looking at the probability here, it's.
Did we play Vancouver earlier this season? I think we did.
Vancouver, actually.
Okay. So
no, I think I'm fairly certain we did. Yeah. I'm fairly certain we did.
It's not our first game, but whatever.
We did. We played Vancouver. I think, February 12th. So it must have been one of those. Was it like one of those preseason games or something? I don't know.
Well, maybe then. Yeah, I don't know.
Must have been. I don't think we actually played them in the actual season because we played them on May 27th.
Okay. I thought we played them actually more recently.
Yeah, we did. We won May 27th, 3-1.
Okay.
we have already played
them. Well, it'd be nice if there was Steve Dangle to watch, you know. That's what I wish I could watch this game with Steve Dangle so he could just lose his mind whenever we score on them.
That's right. Well, gentlemen, as always, it's awesome talking St. Louis sports with you guys, even though two of the four teams that we have are just absolutely atrocious.
Hey, but, at least, know, we got something cool to watch. So it's better than being in some of those small cities that only have like one team and they're, you know, and they've got to put it all on them. And when they suck, they suck. So at least we got something fun to watch.
Yeah, amen to that. But, you know, as always, I appreciate you guys. Tom, appreciate the listeners listening in as well. And make sure to interact with us. We love answering your questions. And we can definitely talk about any of the topics that you bring up. So until next time, we will catch you here on the Hometown Losers podcast. Have a great night, everybody.
Hey guys, this is Adam. Just want to say thanks for listening to the Hometown Losers podcast. We'll see you next week as we continue our discussion of St. Louis sports.